Please be seated. There's a poem that I've saved for many years, and I think I've shared it with you before. I don't remember, but the writer of the poem is unknown, and it's entitled Free. So listen to it. To laugh is to risk appearing the fool. To weep is to risk appearing sentimental. To reach out for another is to risk involvement. To expose feelings is to risk exposing your true self. To place your ideas, your dreams before a crowd is to risk their loss. To love is to risk not being loved in return. To live is to risk dying. To hope is to risk despair. To try is to risk failure. But risks must be taken, because the greatest hazard in life is to risk nothing. The person who risks nothing, does nothing, has nothing, and is nothing. They may avoid suffering and sorrow, but they cannot learn, feel, change, grow, live. Chained by their attitudes, they are a slave. They have forfeited their freedom. Only a person who risks is free. That's our gospel lesson for today. It is a message about being enslaved or being free, about being cautious or daring to risk. It is a message about fear, about what kind of God we see when we envision God. And as hard as I've tried not to make it, it really is a message about good stewardship. You know the story. Three slaves and three decisions. Two slaves double their money and are rewarded, while the third buries it in the ground to keep from losing it and is condemned. He's condemned harshly. And if you're keeping count, this will be the sixth time in the Gospel of Matthew that we talk about weeping and gnashing of teeth. The lesson from the parable, of course, is don't bury your treasure. Don't bury your talent. And that's easy enough to understand. But for me, one of the questions of this parable has always been, why these servants reacted the way they did? But even more than that, what is it that motivated them? Now, the third servant, I think that's easy to figure out. He makes no bones about it. He is terrified of his master. He believes his master to be harsh and aggressive, if not dishonest, in his dealings. But there really is no evidence in the parable that the master actually is that way. Yet the servant believes it, and he's afraid. And so he freezes. Fear will do that. And by contrast, we really don't know a thing about the feelings or motivation of the other two slaves. We only know that whatever it was that the third servant saw that so terrified him didn't have the same effect on the first two. The first two saw something different, and that changed everything. Now think about how often that's true in everyday life. What we expect is most often what we see. Some of us think that conflict is awful and we ought to avoid it at all costs. And if that's the case, then more often than not, conflict will be awful. But if we see conflict as an opportunity, hard to do, I know, then we'll probably experience it as just that. Again and again, our experience of life is so very deeply shaped by our expectations. And I have a hunch that the same is true of our expectations of God. Because of who we are, because of our upbringing, our joys or bumps or bruises along the way, each of us carry with us a certain picture of God. And our experience of God rarely strays from that picture. For many, God is loving and kind, like a jolly grandparent. But for others, God is stern and judgmental. For some, God is protective. For others, God seems to always be on the verge of anger. For some, God is patient and long-suffering. while for others, God is impatient and dour. And like the third slave, these pictures shape not only how we think about God, but how we actually experience God, how we actually experience so many events in our day-to-day life that we connect, sometimes unconsciously, to our life of faith. So what is your picture of God? I can't answer that for you, nor tell you what it should be. Only you can determine that in the silence of your own heart. But it matters. It matters because how you picture God is a function of how you live your life of faith. And collectively, our individual experiences determine who we are as a church. Are we risk takers, or are we barriers burying the ground? Well, as I complete my 9th year here, I think I have a pretty good handle on that. Just look around you. This is a place that risked not one, but two significant building programs in the midst of the worst economy in generations. Not just to make things nicer or prettier, but because we had to. And together we chose to make an investment in the future of those who follow us. I see a place that risks feeding 117 children each week. Yes, that number has gone up to 117. 117 children, despite the enormous and sometimes overwhelming resources that are required. And I see a place that has never, not once, said we can't, we don't have enough when it comes to a ministry, a program, or a need. And that is pretty amazing. You see what is accomplished by those risks. It's a lesson about stepping out with God's treasure, the gospel, in our hands and risking it for the sake of God and for our own sake. To risk loving, even though we might get hurt. To risk reaching out to others, even though we might be rejected. And to risk that walk with Christ, even though we might sometimes fall down. But it's also important that we stay vigilant. That we stay vigilant until that master returns. Because the risk is the only thing that separates us from the third slave. That risk is the only thing that keeps us from resting in our own complacency when things are going well. And I think there's something else really important for us to consider when we look at this parable. Have you ever considered what the master's reaction would have been if the first two slaves had lost what they'd been entrusted with? Were they praised merely because they doubled their money? Would they have been just as condemned by the master if they lost it all because they took a risk? I don't know. I don't think so. Actually, I don't believe that for a minute. Because you see, I don't believe our faithfulness is measured by our successes, but rather how persistent we are in trying. It's the trying. The trying changes the world, especially when the successes sometimes seem so slow in coming. And as the incredible Thomas Edison once said, I have never failed. I have just found 10,000 things that don't work. The parable of the talents is a lesson that asks each of us to take a risk. To consider, what would the church be like if every member was like me? What would the world be like if everyone believed just like I do? What would the community be like if everyone was a steward of the good news just like me? Would the church be empty on Sunday or full to overflowing? How many bruised, hurting, lonely people would be touched by the grace of God if every member of the church took a risk just like me? And it is there that we can come to understand the sin of the third servant. The sin of not daring to risk. The sin of not believing that God will reward all who trust in him. The sin of not trusting the one who gave his life for us to raise us up when we give our lives for him. The glorious mystery of how all that works, the mystery of the gospel, is not entrusted to us to be buried in the ground. It's given to us to be risked and invested in those who pass, we cross every single day. And make no mistake about it, that can be hard. The truth is that our greatest spiritual temptation is to be just like the third slave, to be afraid of being bold enough, to try something new, to learn something new, to be scared of investing our gifts, whatever they may be, given to us not simply for ourselves, but for a world in need. Because the greatest and saddest failure in life is to risk nothing. Just as a poem said, the person who risks nothing, does nothing, has nothing, and is nothing. They may avoid suffering and sorrow, but they cannot learn, feel, change, grow, live. Chained by their attitudes, they are a slave. They have forfeited their freedom. Only a person who risks is free. And the promise of God is that it's a risk worth taking. God love you. Amen.